WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Good morning. Welcome into the program. Happy Thursday to you. Still cold out there, but we're in double digits this morning. It's 14 degrees. Better than 9, right? And we hope that your day is starting off well. Starting off better than Phil Devitz, who had something come up this morning and couldn't make it in to do the news. So we'll have just ABC News for you this morning. And once we get the weather in from Christina Schallhoop over there at ABC 6, we'll bring you that as well. See, there's the folks who do these things for us behind the scenes. They've got so many things that they have to do. And Christina sends over the weather, but most of the time we don't get to it because we're so busy. And she gets to it a little bit later. Like if she sends it earlier, we'd have time, but we don't have time. But she doesn't have time because I swear, first of all, she's a star. If you don't watch ABC 6 News, she's great at explaining everything. She's very personable. She's awesome. And we're social media friends, and she's a lot of fun. I was teasing her the other day because she was so excited about the snow, but they utilize her quite a bit on Channel 6 in the morning. Like, every time I turn around and look, there she is on the screen. Not only is it because people want to know the weather, but because she's great at getting people up in the morning and having their day start off, you know, with a smile. So right now she's on the screen again. So she'll get the weather over to us when she can. She's got a lot of other things that she has to do, and, you know, we're appropriately far down that list. So there's a lot that we can discuss today, day 1,458. That's how many days are left in the Trump administration, but we can talk about some of the news that has come out there. But we're also going to focus on some local stuff today because joining us at 8 o'clock will be New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. He's only going to join us briefly today. He's actually got something he's got to do this morning, and he's going to kind of call us before he goes to do that. We're going to talk about these committee assignments and a little bit of the early year council business. Tonight there's a meeting where, among many, many other things, they're hopefully going to be able to get the licensing board to a quorum. So we'll talk to him about that as well. And then we'll also have the announcement later about when he's going to be joining us on a weekly basis. So we'll have all that for you coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. But until then, it's us, 508-996-0500, app chat, open line voicemails, both available to you on the WBSM app. And I'm going to start off with something here locally, well, here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, but we can discuss the fact that, yes, there were people who were picked up by ICE yesterday. I wonder, and I don't know this for a fact, but are these investigations that were already ongoing, that were at the point of culminating, is this something that's been happening every day anyway? I would assume that it does, but it only got headlines yesterday because, well, people took pictures of ICE standing outside Market Basket in Chelsea, and those went viral, but also because of, you know, Donald Trump's executive orders. I think that's drawn attention to it. But we can talk about that, but that's not the Commonwealth news that I want to bring up to you. I wanted to bring up, and also, on a similar vein, you know, Governor Healey has said that she won't get in the way of federal immigration officials. And really, that's what every elected official is saying. They're saying, we're not going to get in the way. We're not going to obstruct what it is they're doing. But they can also not obstruct at the same time when they're not helping either. And by helping, I don't mean, you know, assisting. Like if they come to you and ask for information, yes, you're going to give them information. But, you know, what she's saying is it's not our jobs to enforce immigration law. It's not our job to alert ICE if we find out that somebody is here illegally. It's not our police department's or our state police's job to go out and look for these people based solely on that. And that's the truth. That's just the truth. You can feel however you want to feel about undocumented immigrants. You can feel however you want to feel about people who came into the country without applying for asylum or going through proper channels. You can feel however you want to feel about what Donald Trump is doing to try to curb immigration. But that doesn't change the fact that the Massachusetts State Police, the Bristol County Sheriff's Department, and any other sheriff's department, unless they have an agreement with ICE, local police, school officials, town officials, it's not any of their jobs to enforce and to be on the lookout for illegal immigration. And you can say all you want. Well, they should be. But they've got so many other things that they are in charge of that are actually the things that they were elected or hired to do. That isn't that. That's what ICE is for. The same way I don't want firefighters going around arresting people. I want them battling fires. And if they're not battling fires, I want them promoting fire safety. And if they're not doing that, I want them resting so that the next time there is a fire, they're well rested and ready to go. You have organizations that are tasked with certain things for a reason. And that's all that these elected officials are saying. People are all up in arms because in, was Worcester, they put out a memo internally to the school staff to say that if ICE shows up, they're not to let them have access to the children. They're supposed to contact the administration. And that's the right answer. A school bus driver is tasked with picking a kid up and dropping a kid off at school. A school bus driver is not tasked with letting anybody that claims that they're from the government come on board the bus and take the kid. I would think that if, you know, you were investigating a kid for some reason or maybe their family and an FBI agent showed up to take a natural born American citizen off the bus, that the bus driver would say, I've got to call the administration. I remember when I was a kid, my bus driver got into a fight with a parent, literally got into a physical confrontation with a parent because the parent took exception with the way that the bus driver treated the kids. So they knew each other. They were well known to each other. And then at a later point, I don't know, probably months later, because it was a different season. I remember that was in the winter and I didn't have a jacket on. Later on in the school year, we were at a different bus stop in a different neighborhood. And that child's father pulled up in the car and said, I want to take my kid off the bus now, as opposed to waiting for you to bring him to my bus stop because I've got to go somewhere. And the bus driver, who definitely knew that that was that kid's father because of what they'd went through, said, no, I'm sorry, I can't. I have to bring him to his bus stop. I can radio in to the transportation coordinator and ask if it's okay, but I can't just do it without somebody else giving me the okay. And that was the right thing, even though he knew 1,000% that that was that kid's father. So that's what I want to have happen. He also one time, and this I can't imagine this was okay, but one time he saw that dad walking down the main road in Plymouth. That's where I went to elementary school. And he pulled over and picked him up and gave him a ride. I don't think that was okay. But anyway, while all the kids were in the bus. But anyway, I don't want bus drivers letting anybody on the bus taking kids off. That's the administration's call, not the school bus driver's call. So that's what people are saying. They're saying, we're not going to stand in the way. We will help. You know, we will give information when asked, but we're not going to do that job. Just like if Fun 107 comes down here and asks me for help with something or asks me a question, I'll help them. I'll give them all the information I can if I have information they can use. But I'm not just going to go walk into their studio and start hosting their show. But that's not the Commonwealth news that I wanted to bring up this morning, because I've got a feeling that this conversation will affect this audience. So there's some new proposals in the Massachusetts state budget that are sparking some debate, and you can read more about it at WCVB.com. One of them is putting cameras at intersections that would allow law enforcement to utilize those cameras for fining people and, you know, utilizing in cases against them. Now, I don't know the deep details of that. I don't know if that means they'd be scanning the camera footage to try to catch people, or if it meant if they tried to catch people, they could use that camera footage to help it, you know, enforce it. Like if I'm speeding through an intersection and I don't stop at the stoplight, do I get fined for that? Or is it that I will be seen by a law enforcement official who then can utilize that footage to make sure that I get fined? I don't know. The way it works in some places where they have those traffic cameras is you can go run the red light and you think you got away with it because nobody saw it. And then you get a letter in the mail from the RMV with a fine and a screenshot of you in your vehicle going through the red light. So that's one of them. But I don't think that one's going to affect people as much as the next one. Because most of us obey the traffic laws, right? I know some of you are like winking at the radio right now. But they're also considering putting a tax on candy. Right now in Massachusetts, candy qualifies as food. And there is no tax on it. But proponents of adding this tax say candy isn't really food. It's empty calories. And as such, you know, we want to keep people from eating things that are unhealthy for them. And if we tax them, that'll deter it. I don't understand that thinking, because if you want candy, is a couple more cents going to keep you from getting candy? If you really want some peanut butter cups and they're, I don't know, $1.99, does having them become, I don't know, $2.25? I can't do tax in my head. That's why I use a calculator or just pay whatever they tell me at the register. Is $2.25 going to stop you from getting those peanut butter cups? Probably not. So I don't think it's going to curb anything, but it will generate revenue. But where does it stop from there? I mean, first of all, what do you classify as candy? If I'm going into CVS, Walgreens, whatever, and I buy peanut butter cups, candy. But what if I buy something that I always have in my pocket? Breath savers. Is that candy? Am I going to pay tax on breath savers? We could probably fund government programs based solely on the tax they'd make off my breath savers alone. Whenever anybody says, hey, do you have a mint? I'm like, do you know me? Of course I do. So where does it go from there too as well? Because if you're going to tax candy because you're worried about empty calories, well, then maybe we end up getting a tax on soda, like an extra tax on soda. Maybe they start doing, you know, they say, well, you know, we don't think that, I don't know, popcorn is a good thing. We're gonna put an extra tax on that. Or, you know what, we know we already tax prepared foods, but we've decided that, you know, fast food is not good for you. So in addition to the prepared meals tax that you pay on fast food, we're also going to add, you know, an unhealthy tax. It seems like you're opening the door for them to say, we can move this over to here and now we can do this as well. Fundamentally, I'm not opposed to it, because I don't think it's going to make a difference in the long run. But I think it's just a little bit too regulatory. You know, if you remember when New York City wanted to, what is it? They banned soft drinks over a certain size. So you couldn't go into 7-Eleven anymore and get a big gulp. I mean, there was a time when I would go into 7-Eleven and get the biggest big gulp they have. What was it? The super big gulp or something? Super gulp? Now I couldn't imagine drinking that much soda in a week. I'll get a small, you know, Coke Zero or something if I was going to get one at a fast food place or something, and I would drink a little bit of it with my meal, and then the rest of it would just sit on my counter till I threw it away. But I think that there's too much of a regulatory aspect to that. You know, it just, how are you going to decide what counts as candy? Is it going to be a certain percentage sugar content? Is it going to be, you know, that there has to be a list of classifications for every brand? I don't know. And then where does it go from there? What does that open the door for? So what do you think? 508-996-0500. Let's take a break here, and we'll be back in a few moments. And welcome back in. Sorry, I got too excited there. I fired off the Eddie Money a little bit too soon because I'm just a huge Eddie Money guy. I love Eddie Money, and got to work with him when he came down here to the South Coast. Not the infamous time that he played at Durfee High School or didn't play when he cut the show short because he didn't like the way the sound system sounded. I went to the Rock for Christmas event that was at the Seaport Inn in Fairhaven. I actually worked with Wayne, the guy who put it on, and I was kind of the PR person for Rock for Christmas. Helped with the press releases and getting the info out, and so I got to hang out during the rehearsals the night before and meet Eddie Money, and oh man, such a great time. Neither one of them are no longer with us. Neither Wayne nor Eddie Money. They've both moved on to the great benefit show in the sky. But when that song came out, man, did I have a crush on Ronnie Spector. Always loved her voice, but then I saw her in the video and I was like, She's a goddess. And when that song came out, you know, she was in her early 40s then. She's also no longer with us. She passed away in 2022. But I remember the story of Brian Wilson, you know, what kind of changed him in his musical direction. What made him want to write deeper and more, better produced stuff than the surf songs that they had been writing was when Be My Baby came out and he was driving down the road in his car and he heard that Phil Spector wall of sound and he said he was so overwhelmed by it, he had to pull over and concentrate on it. And then he went and got the record and had to like tear it apart and see what he could hear. And say what you will about Phil Spector, you can say a lot about him, but creating that wall of sound motif for that music was a stroke of genius. But as many geniuses are, he was also a tortured individual, apparently. But 508-996-0500 if you want to call in and get involved in the discussion. So I was talking about the proposed tax on candy. And I was thinking, okay, well, what if you said, well, we're not going to tax breath mints. Or maybe breath mints are already taxed. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know if those qualify as food. Or gum. But what would that open the door up? Taxing candy. What would that open the door up to? I mean, a Pop-Tart isn't really good for you. But is a Pop-Tart now going to be taxed? How about if you go and buy some Hostess cakes? I don't know if those are out of tax either. Come to think of it, I probably pay a lot of tax, sales tax, on things that I don't even realize that I do. It's just it stands out more when I go to buy something. I'm like, wait a minute, there shouldn't be tax on this. Like the time I went to buy some clothing and I was taxed because I had figured it out the price in my head. And when they're like, oh, yeah, well, there's tax on that. And I'm like, but it's clothing. Yeah, but it's accessories. What? Oh, okay. Or when I went to the bookstore and the book was $19.99 and I put a $20 bill down and they're like, oh, there's tax. Like, no, there's no tax on books. Apparently there was. So maybe I'm not totally up to date on all the different things that are supposed to be taxed, but I know that this opens the door for them to reclassify a lot of other things. When you're already paying a lot of taxes anyway, shouldn't you be able to have your Three Musketeers or your Milky Way without having to pay extra? I mean, not that there are many places where you can get penny candy anymore, but if you're going to go get penny candy, you're going to pay tax on a penny? I used to love going to the little convenience store down the street from my grandparents' house because the guy who ran it, his idea of penny candy, he had some things that were a penny, some things that were 10 cents, some things that were 5 cents, some things that were even a quarter. And you'd go in there and you'd get your little brown paper bag and you'd fill it up with a bunch of stuff. And then you'd walk up to him. And, you know, you got like $2 or $3 in your pocket and you're like, oh, I hope it's not any more than that. I think I did the math right. And then you walk over and you hand him the bag and he would just like pick it up, shake it in his hand and be like, 50 cents. You know, nowadays they'd be weighing it. They'd be running a infrared scanner over it. Back in those days, he would just hold it up and be like, this kid doesn't look like he has a whole bunch of money. Give me 50 cents. Because he knew that if I had $3 and he only took 50 cents of it, I was coming back and spending the rest of the 250 anyway. And he was also, we talked about this a few months ago, he was also one of the only places I know of that would actually give you a free Tootsie Pop if you came in with the Indian shooting the star with the bow and arrow. Are you familiar with that urban legend that if you open up your Tootsie Pop wrapper and you find the Native American with the bow and arrow and the star? So the way the story goes is if you saw that, you would get if you got that on your wrapper, you could trade that in at the store for a free Tootsie Pop. Some people said you had to mail it in. But most of the people that I know that talked about it said, no, you just bring it down to the store and they collect them all and send them back to Tootsie. And it wasn't true. There's never been any truth to that. Tootsie Roll Industries is the name of the company. They never had a policy in place to do that. They've never formally said anything except now they've talked about the legend. But they never said formally anything about any icon on the wrapper. Now they say, you know, some people believe that getting the Native American is good luck. But they only have 6 designs, so you've got a, you know, 1 in 6 chance of seeing it, I guess. But some stores still would do it. And Minahan's and Randolph would give you a free Tootsie Pop if you came in with the Native American and the star. Look, I got the Indian wrapper. Well, here you go. Pick out a pop. And I put up pictures of it on, because I got a bag in my office around Halloween time. And I put up a picture of me getting the Native American and the star. And people were like, oh, are you going to go trade that in? And so that prompted me to write an article looking at, is that real or not? And just the other day, I was on Facebook and I saw somebody sharing something about the Native. And I dropped a link to the story. I was like, sadly, not true. But that doesn't mean somebody won't still honor it. Doesn't mean you still can't go into a store, especially if it's a candy store and they're familiar with the legend. You're not going to go in a Stop and Shop and be like, oh, I got a Native American on my wrapper. Can I open up a bag and take one? And there are still some candy stores out there. I love going to the one at the Wrentham Village Outlets. They've got old school stuff you can't find anywhere else. But now that store is going to have to start adding tax into all the purchases that people make there. So we can talk about that. We can talk about the stories, the reporting that people were picked up in Massachusetts yesterday by immigration officials. While Governor Healey is saying that local law enforcement, state law enforcement aren't going to be helping ICE. They're not going to be doing their job for them. They're not going to stand in the way either. And, of course, the continued flurry of executive orders coming from the White House, most of which are already being challenged, and some of which people feel have no possibility of actually going forward. I heard that discussion last night on CNN. I'm doing a Twin Peaks rewatch, and I watched an hour or so of it before bed. And when I turned off the TV, CNN was on. They were talking about how they don't think that Donald Trump really wants to end birthright citizenship, that he's just putting out the executive order knowing it's designed to fail. But then he can at least say, hey, I tried. I fulfilled the campaign promise. Sorry, nothing I can do about it. But I will say this. I'm seeing a lot of things on Twitter, which is a complete dumpster fire of an algorithm now, in which I'm being fed what Elon Musk wants me to see, not what I want to see. And I'm being fed a lot of right-wing news, and I'm seeing a lot of right-wing commentators, well, comments, people who are conservatives who voted for Donald Trump who are like, wait a minute, what? Now, I don't know if that is, you know, is that bots designed to engage people in conversation and keep them engaged with the app? Or are those real people that already 3-4 days in feel like they were lied to? I'd like to think that there are people that are smartening up pretty quickly and said, oh man, what did I do here? But I also think what's more likely is you're getting a programmed conversation starter designed to elicit liberal thinking people to then go on there and be like, see, I told you so. What'd you expect was going to happen? And get them engaging with the app rather than tuning it out. But either way, it's interesting to see the comments that come up as a result of that conversation. That's the problem with Twitter. Unless you know the person that's tweeting, or you're, you know, unless you know that this is definitely an elected official, or this is somebody who is a media pundit or a news reporter or somebody that you know in real life, it's hard to really know for sure who's real and who isn't, because the verification badge doesn't mean anything anymore. When Musk took over, the verification badge became just a sign that you're paying him $14 a month or whatever the price is now. Whereas before, the verification badge was something that had to be earned. There was a process. I had a blue check. Because not only do I work as a journalist, but there's other Tim Weisbergs on Twitter who aren't me. And so the argument that was made was, I don't want people to confuse me with these people when I'm trying to put out information. And after a bunch of review, I ended up getting the blue check mark. And then when it came time to pay for it, I was like, yeah, I don't need that. So you don't know, just because they have the blue check doesn't mean that it's a real account. It could be still a bot. Whether it's created by outside people to put onto Twitter, or whether it's created by Twitter itself to keep you engaged with the app. I don't trust any of it. I just look at it as entertainment. If I open it up, it's mostly to check on either, you know, a live sporting event that's going on or something to do with wrestling. I'm going to take a break here. We'll be back in a few moments. Welcome back in. Say, if you haven't had a chance yet to enter a photo of you and your pet and how much you look alike, you can do that now at WBSM.com or on the WBSM app. We'll be taking some entries for a few more days. And basically what we're looking for is you don't have to actually resemble each other. You know, you don't have to have a face like a bulldog. Or even weirder, your bulldog have a face like a human. But you don't need to actually look like you're twins, but you could be dressed up the same. You could be making the same expression, you know, things like that. And you enter in those photos at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. We're going to then put out a gallery next week for people to vote on their favorite. And the winner is going to get a $250 gift card. So it's brought to you by Wareham Animal Hospital. Go check out the story at WBSM.com and on the app. It's got the form in there to fill out. Now, again, we just ask that you only submit photos of yourself and your pet. Don't submit other people without their knowledge. And they cannot be professional photos. It's got to be something that you snapped or, you know, someone in your family snapped. It can't be something where you went to the Sears Portrait Studio, which I know doesn't exist anymore, but you can't go to the Sears Portrait Studio and have a formal portrait done of you and your dog, you and your cat, you and your lizard. Because then we would need that photographer's permission. So you can find out more at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. Also on the website and the app, we have a story today from Nancy Hall that we're talking about this potential candy tax. Well, if you're looking to cut some calories this year, but you also want to have something desserty, Polar Seltzer has released what they're calling their small batch dessert can flavors for the winters. Lemon meringue, apple crisp, strawberry rhubarb pie, and cinnamon bun. Now, I am not a huge fan of Polar Seltzer. I like some of their sodas, but I don't think that I would be drinking any of those particular. Maybe the apple crisp sounds pretty good, but I'm good on drinking lemon meringue, drinking cinnamon bun. Although cinnamon bun coffee's okay, and drinking strawberry rhubarb pie. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
How you doing, Tim?
Good. How are you?
All right. I got a question for you.
Sure.
You were talking about taxes and stuff and prices. There's only two gas stations in New Bedford that don't do it. Everywhere else, they charge extra when you use your debit or credit card for gas. Why is that?
Because they're passing the processing fee on to you.
Oh. So these other two gas stations just eat it then?
Yeah, well, it's not so much that they eat it. They probably charge it to you, but they don't advertise it as such. So what a lot of these places do is they're trying to keep that number down that they put on the neon sign. So that's why they'll charge a different price, because if they have to charge, say, $288 to cover the credit card charges, what they'll do is they'll charge $278 and then tell you it's $288 with credit. You know what I mean?
Well, these two other gas stations don't do that at all. It's the same price as if you pay with cash or the thing. It's the same, right on the pump. When you press the button, the price comes up, what you're paying, and it's the same. It don't change.
Yeah, so they're just paying for it themselves. I know, you know, some gas stations will have the signs that say the difference in price. You know, it'll say cash price, credit price, whatever. Yes. Others will just say whatever the price is, and it doesn't matter, and that's probably going to be a few cents more than that place down the street that puts the cash only price up.
All right. Yeah. I was just wondering that. Yeah. There's two in New Bedford that don't charge. High Low and Joe's gas station. The only ones that you can use your cards without being charged extra.
I usually get gas at either one of those if I'm driving by either one too.
Yeah. That's my go-to places. Joe's or the High Low.
And you know what's funny is it is amazing how you can, you know, go just down the block and there's another gas station that's charging 10 or 15 cents more per gallon.
Yo, it's a big difference. I got a Suburban, so that's a big difference when I'm getting 20 gallons of gas.
Yeah, so I don't blame you for making a trek to one of those two places.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and I had another thing. Hey, for the cookout contest, you have to have a contest to enter into that contest.
Oh, yeah. So it's got to be cream of the crop to even get in there and compete.
Yes. That's how you got to make it. That way you know the people are for real about doing the stuff.
Well, something to keep. I mentioned that to the boss. I said, you know, what if we actually looked into seriously doing something like this, you know, when we had to get the permitting? If I went through the process, could we get the permitting? And he's like, I don't know. Because, you know, then we have to get into, does our insurance cover if we serve food to somebody and they choke? There's so many little intricacies that I didn't even take into account.
That's what we got waivers for, liability waiver.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny is liability waivers aren't as ironclad as people think they are, as I've learned over the years running events.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can't make it ironclad? Like I signed a waiver at Funsies for my kid. If the equipment is a thing that certain, if the equipment's malfunction, then they're liable. But if the kid hurts himself on the other way there, they're not liable.
That's the thing. Like if your son decides he's going to do a cannonball and he dives face first and hits his face, there's debate about whether or not they're responsible for that. I have a friend who's an injury lawyer and got into it with me over one of my waivers for an event and said, you know, this isn't really as ironclad as you think it is. So it's interesting.
Okay.
All right.
We have to figure out. Well, we definitely have to have, there should be a day, broadcasting live on the radio, people show up and, you know, I really want to win this thing. So,
well, we'll see what we can do. Thank you for the call.
All right.
Have a good day,
boss.
All right, I got to take a break here before the end of the hour. We'll be right back.
Details.